to look very carefully at the steps they take.
One top U.S. official says China should watch its steps when it comes to Hong Kong. This is Friday, August 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, tensions tighten between Japan and South Korea. Chinese tariffs have sunk some U.S. lobster businesses, and others have changed their business models. It's all coming your way on today's VOA Asia. Beijing warned Thursday that it will not sit by and watch the unrest unfolding in Hong Kong as U.S. President Donald Trump urged his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping to meet with pro-democracy protesters and make a deal. There have been growing concerns that China is considering direct intervention in the crisis. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned it against creating a new Tiananmen Square, referring to the infamous 1989 crackdown on protesters in Beijing. Images taken by AFP on Thursday showed thousands of Chinese military personnel waving red flags and parading at a sports stadium in the city of Shenzhen, just across the border from Hong Kong. Dozens of armored personnel carriers and supply trucks were also parked nearby. Chinese state-run media reported this week that the elements of the People's Armed Police, which is under the command of the Central Military Commission, were assembling in Shenzhen. China's ambassador to London, Liu Xiaoming, said Thursday that Beijing would not sit by and watch, warning that his government had enough solutions and enough power to quell the unrest swiftly. Trump urged a peaceful solution on Thursday, tweeting that if Xi would meet directly and personally with the protesters, there would be a happy and enlightened ending to the Hong Kong problem. Washington has become increasingly alarmed by Chinese security forces gathering near the border with Hong Kong as the protests show no signs of abating and Beijing intensifies its drumbeat of intimidation against a movement pushing for democratic reform. In an interview with VOA, published on Thursday, Bolton told our contributing reporter Greta Van Susteren that people in America remember Tiananmen Square.
Well, you know, the Chinese have accused the United States of being the cause of all these demonstrations. They've said we're the black hand that's gotten all this started. And they've done things like publish private information about diplomats, U.S. diplomats in Hong Kong. That's the kind of thing that needs to stop. The Chinese have to look very carefully at the steps they take because people in America remember Tiananmen Square. They remember the picture of the man standing in front of the line of tanks. They remember the statue of Lady Liberty. They remember voices of the Chinese people asking for freedom and democracy. And they remember the repression of the Chinese government in 1989. It would be a big mistake to create a new memory like that in Hong Kong.
What's the cost, though, to China? I mean, those horrible memories that you just recited, I remember them. I remember watching them. But China's done fine in spite of that.
Well, that's one
reason. Why not take another round at it?
That one reason that we're engaged in a very difficult economic contest with China now is one reason that they did well after that was by stealing American intellectual property, engaging in forced technology transfer, and not just from the United States, but from Europe and Japan as well. Something like 60% of the investment in mainland China goes through Hong Kong. Why? Because it has a judicial system that's trustworthy, based on the English model that we know in this country. The courts are thought to be impartial. If Hong Kong loses that reputation because of a bad decision by the Chinese government, they'll have significant economic consequences in China this time. And I can tell you from what I've heard just in the past few weeks, the mood in Congress is very volatile at this point. And a misstep by the Chinese government, I think, would cause an explosion on Capitol Hill.
What do you think President Xi is thinking about what's going on in Hong Kong?
Well, I think if he's worried about the steps that he might take in the future, he's also worried about the spirit that everybody else in China can see about Hong Kong. They want their freedom. And I think what the United States expects, at a minimum, is that China will uphold the treaty agreement it made with the United Kingdom when Hong Kong was handed back to China, the commitment for one country but two systems, that for 50 years after the handover, Hong Kong would maintain its unique system and the freedoms that were left to it by the British. If that treaty's violated, that's a significant credibility problem for Beijing.
Please accept our apologies for the quality of that audio. The previous day, President Trump linked a possible trade deal with Beijing to a peaceful resolution to the political unrest that has roiled the semi-autonomous Chinese city for 10 weeks. In the first clear indication that the trade deal could be threatened by how Beijing reacts to the protest, U.S. President Trump tweeted millions of jobs are being lost in China to other non-tariff countries. Thousands of companies are leaving. Of course, China wants to make a deal. Let them work humanely with Hong Kong first. Coming up on VOA Asia, I'll be talking with our VOA correspondent in Hong Kong about his impressions of the situation there. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Pakistan says three of its soldiers were killed Thursday in clashes with India across the disputed Kashmir border known as the Line of Control, all amid increasing tensions between the two nations over the Himalayan region. Some experts say the recent missile tests by North Korea show potential weapons that are designed to circumvent preemptive strikes that would destroy them on their launch pads before being fired. Hong Kong's government announces tax cuts and higher social spending to reverse a deepening economic slump aggravated by anti-government protest and the U.S.-Chinese tariff war. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. VOA correspondent Michael Sullivan took some time this week talking with various segments of Hong Kong society. He told me in a Skype chat from Hong Kong that for some, enough is enough.
When you do talk to local people, a lot of them feel sympathy, but it's kind of wearing on them, the continued protests. And this was, I saw this today. I went to a news conference sponsored by a group of protesters at the University of Hong Kong. And the protesters who appeared there were not students there, but it was arranged by students. And one of the students, a 19-year-old a young woman, political science major, was standing there talking to several reporters, and as was a professor who was down in the student union between classes, I guess. And the professor first said, you know, I sympathized with what these people are doing. I still sympathize with their goals, but I don't like this kind of conflict. And he said not all the protesters are violent, but some of them are. And he thinks it's too confrontational, and they should just back off. Plus, he said he doesn't think that a university is a place for this kind of political debate. Now, the girl was not very confrontational, but after he left, she said, I disagree completely. She said, I'm a political science student, and I think that, you know, these are the things we should be discussing because this affects our future. It's the future of Hong Kong. And, you know, what is it she's trying to achieve? Well, as she explains it, democratic freedoms. And there are five proposals that they list. One of them is ostensibly achieved, which is not quite the shelving, but at least the putting on hold of this extradition treaty to China, which people were very upset about. But there are other things, too, including universal suffrage, because you still don't have one person, one vote. It's a rigged system, in a sense, and Beijing is able to control the local Hong Kong administration. So she wants full suffrage. She said there is some dispute among students as to whether some of them would like independence. Some want to remain a part of China, but they want guarantees that these special freedoms, the semi-autonomy that China is supposed to enjoy until 2047, the 50-year mark of the handover, they want to be sure that those guarantees are honored. And virtually everyone here says that they're not being honored. Beijing is being heavy-handed. The question is, how do you deal with that?
In your sense, do you feel there is a division among the protesters as far as those, some being more leaning toward violence than others?
Well, I think there is. And in fact, at the airport, where we were for several days, as we know, nearly 1,000 flights were canceled. The protests were mostly nonviolent, but there were protesters who tried to block entryways, and some protesters seized two people who they decided were mainland Chinese infiltrators who were there as essentially undercover agents, and they just held them. And, you know, others felt very uncomfortable, apparently, about this. And so there is this kind of a division. You always get more radical and more moderate factions. So I think there is a division among the protesters, and this something you always see in this kind of a uncoordinated mass movement.
Let's stretch this out just a bit as to how, number one, the government of Hong Kong, and number two, Beijing, might react to that kind of division.
Well, the few protesters that I've been able to really stop and talk with have said they are worried about that. They realize, of course, that something could happen. But in each case, they said they don't have any choice because too much is at stake. The future of Hong Kong is at stake. They realize, and people are talking about this, there are stories of People's Liberation Army troops being massed in Shenzhen, just across the border of the special administrative region of Hong Kong. And it will be a pretty dramatic move if they were sent into Hong Kong. But if things got bad enough, it could happen. The question is, have troops been trained sufficiently in the past 30 years since Tiananmen Square that they could, you know, maintain order and peacefully subdue a major demonstration or violent demonstration? And nobody really knows. You know, things can get out of hand so quickly. And the protesters you talk to are mostly young, and they know about Tiananmen Square, but they weren't mostly alive at the time. And you know, they don't take it probably as seriously as they should.
VOA's Michael O'Sullivan reporting from Hong Kong. Mike, thanks. Happening now in Asia, at least 14 people were killed Thursday in apparent coordinated attacks involving Myanmar ethnic rebel forces, according to a military spokesman. The targets spread out across northern Myanmar included the Defense Services Technology Academy in the town of Pien U Win in the Mandalay region. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe Thursday marked the anniversary of Japan's World War II surrender by sending a memorial to the war-linked Yasukuni Shrine. That move upset many in South Korea who were observing what they referred to as Liberation Day with a series of anti-Japan protests. The demonstrations come as Korea-Japan ties sank to their lowest level in years, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
The Liancourt Rocks, controlled by South Korea, but also claimed by Japan. This South Korean boy band wants you to know who they think the islets belong to. It's a sign of just how intense nationalism is in South Korea right now, especially sentiment against Japan, Korea's former colonial occupier. The wounds may be old, but the hurt for some is still raw.
I could never forgive them. Tell me, who could?
Japan's history of forced labor, including the exploitation of so-called comfort women, still causes tensions today.
They're women, just like me, and it is still an unresolved issue.
Regarding the comfort women issue, I think South Korea needs to receive a firm apology from Japan.
And they should not just pay compensation. Japan also needs to sincerely apologize.
Japan has apologized, but says all compensation claims were settled in the 1965 treaty. Those claims are at the heart of a dispute that saw Seoul and Tokyo recently downgrade trade ties. In a speech Thursday, South Korean President Moon Jae-in lowered the temperature, saying South Korea would join hands with Japan if it chooses dialogue. But in Seoul, there are continued calls for a boycott. And as relations between the two U.S. allies threaten to spin out of control, some fear the U.S. isn't doing enough to help.
There isn't the level of concern there should be, and in fact that this is a 70-year low in relations between our friends in both Seoul and Tokyo.
U.S. President Donald Trump at one point complained mediating between the two countries would be a full-time job, but it's not clear who else can help.
The United States remains the senior alliance partner. The United States remains the only game in town.
But so far, U.S. attempts to publicly mediate have resulted in little more than awkwardness. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news break from VOA Asia, the UN Security Council is due to meet behind closed doors Friday at the request of China and Pakistan to discuss India's decision to revoke the special status of Jammu and Kashmir, according to diplomats. That region in the Himalayas has long been a flashpoint in ties between the two nuclear-armed neighbors, China, rather India and Pakistan. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. In July of 2018, China imposed tariffs on many American goods and products, including its highly coveted Maine lobsters. In just 1 year, export sales of the tasty crustaceans plummeted by more than 80%, forcing American companies exporting to China to make drastic changes. VOA's Julie Tabo traveled to the northeastern state of Maine to learn firsthand about the economic impact of Chinese tariffs on the industry.
Tom Martin has been a lobsterman for 35 years.
I started lobstering as a summer job as a kid when I was 14, and then lobstered every summer until I went to college for about a year and then dropped out and started lobstering year-round.
He says he enjoys what he does, despite the hard work.
Some years you catch a lot of lobsters, some years you don't, but you just work as hard as you can and then let the chips fall where they may.
Lobstermen sell their catch to local wholesalers and restaurants. Like Luke's Lobster in Portland Harbor, which serves about 60 whole lobsters a day.
It's fresh, tasty, and the price is really good.
But wholesalers like Sheila Adams of Maine Coast, who export live lobsters to overseas markets, have not been so lucky. In July of 2018, China imposed retaliatory tariffs on U.S. food and agricultural exports, which included live lobsters. Adams saw her business drop by 20% overnight.
About 80% of our sales into mainland China have gone away.
That's because the 25% tariff has to be paid by their Chinese customers, who looked to Canada as an alternative source for their live lobsters. So Adams and her team had to look to other markets, both domestically and overseas, to make up the difference. Today, as fresh live lobsters arrive at their facility, they are processed, packaged, and prepared for shipping to 29 other countries.
It takes all of those other countries combined to equal one market in mainland China. So we had to put a tremendous amount of effort across many, many markets to try to recoup the lost business in China.
Wade Merritt is president of the Maine International Trade Center and director of international trade for the state of Maine. He says Maine Coast is a good example of the impact of the tariffs on the industry.
Exports of live lobster to China from Maine, comparing between 2018 and 2019, they're down 82%. So it has had a significant impact on that industry.
And this has had a severe trickle-down effect.
Think about the corner store or the gas station or the schools or the anything in any of these communities that is a major lobster fishing port. If they're not fishing lobsters, then there is a real problem for those other businesses too.
Fully closed.
He encourages companies to diversify and also continue nurturing existing relationships. Advice Sheila Adams agrees with.
Our relationships with our customers in China are really important to us. They've become good friends of ours, and they look forward to the day when the tariff situation resolves and that we can go back to doing business together, let the free market economy come back to being, and let trade happen.
And that will be good news for all who have made lobsters a focus of their daily lives. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Portland, Maine.
These news headlines from VOA Asia. Malaysian authorities say there was no evidence of foul play in the death of a 15-year-old British national who disappeared from a Malaysian resort earlier this month. Police told reporters Thursday an autopsy on Nora Ann Quarren the day before she died from intestinal bleeding and starvation and stress. This is VOA Asia. The World Health Organization warns measles outbreaks are rapidly spreading around the world because fewer people are getting vaccinated against the preventable disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Health Agency reports measles cases in the first 6 months of this year were the highest since 2006. To date, it reports 365,000 cases, nearly three times as many as the same period last year. The agency notes the actual number of cases is substantially higher because fewer than 1 in 10 cases gets reported. So far this year, WHO reports a 900% rise in measles cases in the African region, followed by a 230% increase in the Western Pacific region and 120% in the European region. Only the Southeast Asian and Americas regions appear to be coming to grips with the disease. Both show a 15% drop in cases. The World Health Organization notes the Democratic Republic of Congo, Madagascar, and Ukraine report the highest numbers of cases this year. But WHO spokesman Christian Lindmeier says Madagascar is turning things around for the better.
As part of the good news, due to a nationwide emergency measles vaccine campaigns in Madagascar, the cases have dramatically decreased in the past several months. So yet they're amongst the highest. This highlights again how effective vaccination is in ending outbreaks and protecting health.
WHO says measles is almost entirely preventable with two doses of a safe, highly effective vaccine. Those who are not covered, it warns, are at risk of serious illness, disability, and even death. Lindmeier says people do not get vaccinated for a variety of reasons. He says it cannot be nailed down to a single cause. For example, he says the anti-vaccination movement and misinformation have a big impact in some communities and countries and not in others.
More important is also the access to healthcare services, the access to drugs, to quality healthcare, availability, also conflict and displacement of people. So many factors come together, and in each community it's a different reason or a combination of different reasons.
WHO reports measles is spreading in a number of countries among older children, youth, and adults who have missed out on vaccination in the past. The agency is urging everyone to ensure their measles vaccinations are up to date. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend ahead.